is Sarah from The Journey, and welcome to the very first My Journey. Now, you may be wondering what this is, especially if you're used to listening to either one of our weekly roundup specials of all the key topics you've been looking at, or one of our expert deep dives on a particular subject. But one of the great privileges I've had over the last couple of years of doing this business is that I've met some really, really inspiring people who've talked to me all about their own personal journey through fertility, conception, early years and pregnancy. And what you very quickly realise is that every single person has their own unique experience. And we decided that we wanted to share some of these, especially with some of the very inspiring people that we've been lucky enough to come into contact with over time. Now, today's kickoff is with the lovely Lottie Jeffs. Now, Lottie's pretty impressive CV. She is an author of How to Be a Gentlewoman, The Art of Soft Power in Hard Times, which is what I think is basically a modern day Bible of how to be a woman in our modern existence. An award-winning journalist, and she's also former deputy editor of Elle magazine. Now, many of us have complicated journeys to parenthood, but when you're in a same-sex couple, it's automatically less straightforward. So Lottie talks to us all about her approach, her experiences, and the lessons she learnt. She also talks to us about being a career woman and having a child, so something that I think many of us these days are grappling with. So we hope you enjoy, and if you want to share your own story, please reach out to us at info@thejourney.com. But without further ado, let's kick off. Hi Lottie, welcome to our very first episode of My Journey.
Oh, it's the first one. Yes. I didn't realise it was the first one. Amazing. Yes. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So for those of you that don't know what My Journey is, we are all about trying to listen to everyone's unique perspective on having kids, because as The Journey suggests, everyone's journey is unique to them and everyone has different experiences and something to bring to the table, and I think we can learn a lot from other people's experience. So thanks so much for sharing yours. Now, Lottie, first question. Talk to us a little bit about how you first came to approach having a child. What went through your mind and when did you feel that it was right for you?
Well, as a gay woman, having a baby was never something that was just going to happen for me. I know that for a lot of straight women, it's also something that doesn't just happen. I don't want it to sound insensitive in that respect. I know it can be difficult for everyone, but the very fact is, as two women, you can't just have sex and have a baby, unfortunately. So I always knew I wanted to have a child. I wasn't quite sure how it would happen. So it was only really when I got into my 30s and I was in a really good relationship, long-term relationship, and we were engaged and married, that I started looking into how I would have a baby in a really practical sense. Because I think you go from it being a sort of abstract, oh, maybe one day we'll have a baby, to like, okay, how do we actually do this? And for me, the how was not as straightforward as I thought, because there's a real lack of information, I think, for lesbians or people that are not having a baby in the natural, in inverted commas, way. There seems to be a real lack of information, which is why I think The Journey is great, because it is somewhere where you can get a lot of information. Not necessarily specifically about gay parenting, but there is just a lot of great information on your site. So I started looking into how we do it.
And so where did you start?
So like, yeah, what is, I mean, literally kind of Googled, like, how do lesbians have babies? And was quite quickly directed to the London Women's Clinic. And they have something called an in-seminar, which is a little pun.
Like what they
not
did there.
Yeah. So we went and had a session there, which you sign up to, and they promise to tell you and answer all of those questions you might have.
Is that a free thing?
That's
is it within
thing.
A group?
That's a free thing. Anyone can do it. I think they do it like once every couple of months. Yeah, you can just sign up and go. And that was really our first step of like making this thing real. and learning about it. So they, at this seminar, went through your different options. It wasn't just for lesbians, it was for women, you know, single women, women with fertility issues, basically anyone that needed to have a helping hand. Yeah, so they talked about the difference between IUI and IVF and assisted IUI, and then they also did a bit about egg sharing and things like that.
Egg sharing?
Yeah, that's so an egg, interesting one. Yeah, egg sharing is something that I actually don't... Oh, I did speak to one lesbian couple who have done it successfully, but it's, as the name suggests, where one woman carries her partner's biological baby, which my wife and I did discuss, but we both kind of felt like if we were going to go through the stress of being pregnant, we kind of wanted it to be our biological child at the end of it.
Yeah.
But I know that there are some people who are maybe a little bit less selfish than us in that respect. Like this one couple I spoke to actually for my podcast, which is about specifically about gay and lesbian parenting. We spoke to her and it sort of wasn't even an issue for her. It wasn't, it didn't come up as like it being a generous thing. It was just like, oh yeah, she just carried my baby, which is, I think, a real gift, like an amazing. But I don't think I could ever expect, well, my wife and I just couldn't expect that of each other, and we totally get why. Anyway, went to this seminar, found out all the information. It was a little bit overwhelming, so took it away. They give you like a pack and you digest it all. And then it's sort of laid out with the prices next to it. And then we just thought, okay, let's get going with this. So
can I just ask one question? Maybe this is a silly question, but do the NHS not offer assistance for same-sex couples?
I don't think they do unless you're having fertility issues. Don't quote me on that because I don't actually know, but I do know that we wouldn't have been able to get what we eventually had, which was IUI, on the NHS. We had to go privately for it. So obviously the other thing you need to consider as a same-sex female couple is sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our next segment in the journey, basically.
So did you realize that that part was the most fundamental thing to think about next because you went to the clinic, or is that just an obvious thing?
I think it was always an obvious thing, and actually it was something that came up before it turning into the practical, how do we do this, as part of the abstract, oh, how, you know, what would it be like if we one day did do this? It was very much part of that conversation. So I'd say and what we felt was initially that we might use a known donor, and then...
Would that be a friend of yours?
A friend.
Yeah.
And we had some conversations with friends about it. But actually, in the end, it didn't work out with any of the friends that we started these conversations with. And it was interesting because it was two guys who came to us. We didn't ask anyone, they came to us. Actually, three guys that came to us and offered. And we really took it really seriously, and we spoke to them a lot about it, and we were very clear on what we wanted, which was a donor, not
a parent.
But in the end, actually, each of the men pulled out, for want of a better term, for their own personal reasons. And they were completely right to have done so, because it just wouldn't have been right for them and what we were asking for. And in the end, we're so grateful that we went on that kind of trajectory and we did explore that option, because it made us realise that
what
really the
want.
Right thing for us was to use a really, by all accounts, lovely, kind and generous anonymous donor. Who we found via a clinic outside of the UK. And that was absolutely the right thing to do. And it's almost like we had to go through that and we had to take it seriously, and really think about it and discuss it. And I did have some friends who along the way were like, are you sure you want to do this with a friend? Like, I'm not sure that's the best.
Gets a bit messy, doesn't it?
Yeah. And we said, well, you know, we do. And we were really trying to think all the way through what the right thing to do for our unborn child was. Like, that was our driving force. Like, what's the best thing to do? What will, we don't want our child to have unanswered questions or to feel lacking in something in their life, and maybe it's better to use a known donor because then it answers those questions. But I think in the end we felt that what we would be able to give a child as two parents would be so fulfilling and loving that hopefully there would never be a sense of a lack or something missing, because we could answer all of those things for our child. So we got there in the end, and it was absolutely the right thing to do. And so you have to, if you're interested in using donor sperm, you have to buy it. You can choose sperm based on characteristics.
Yeah, I was going to ask you just the absolute practicalities. So when you get to the point where you're like, right, we've explored the option with our friends, we've decided it's not right for us, and you decided that you wanted to go on to a donor, how on earth do you go about that? Because obviously you just said that you chose to go with someone that's without, outside of the UK.
Yeah.
So how did you approach that in a kind of practical
way? We just really Googled it and read some articles, and this clinic was recommended and it was really easy to use. You can search through donors, really, it's really user-friendly. You can find all the information that you want about them, hair colour, eye colour. They write a little thing about why they want to be a donor, which is really nice.
Oh, that's,
you can hear a voice recording.
Wow.
You can see a photo of them when they were younger. But we just really Googled like sperm donor clinics in the world. There's ones in the US you can use, there's ones in Europe.
Why did you decide not the UK?
Because you get less information at the London Sperm Bank. You get less information about the donor. And we wanted some information. So that was the main reason. The women's clinic, I think, have a relationship with the London Sperm Bank, so they encourage you to use that one. But you can absolutely use whatever one you want.
And what were the criteria that you two were looking for when you were thinking about
for
choosing
a donor?
We
actually wanted to find somebody who would potentially look like me, because I wasn't carrying the baby. We decided that my wife would go first, and so somebody with my physical characteristics. And then it was honestly just instinct. I can't describe it. We knew that this guy was the right guy.
And you both felt the same thing?
Absolutely.
That's,
yeah,
really,
we just, and it now feels so meant to be, like we got the child that is ours and that we knew that we would through this donor. It just all feels so serendipitous.
And how does it actually practically work? So you say, right, we've found our guy, and obviously it was completely the right one for you.
You can buy it, you can put that sperm in your shopping basket.
Wow.
Then and there.
So it's literally like an Amazon store, and
exactly.
You click to buy.
You click to buy, you can choose the motility of the sperm.
Wow.
And obviously better motility is a bit more expensive. And choose how much you want to buy, and then you get it delivered to, so the women's clinic have a storage facility, so you just input all of that information of the address, then it gets delivered there, and you get an email to say we've got
it's
samples
there.
It's there, ready when you are.
Wow. Now actually I thought what you said was really interesting, that the guys would actually write about why they decided to do it. What were some of the things that were written? Because I'm always interested when someone's very selfless like that. And
yeah.
Because it's not really for money. It's like, must be other reasons. So what
was
some
of
the...
It was a real mix of things, I think. I think it takes a really special kind of person to do it.
I agree.
I don't think it really was for money. I think people just seem to genuinely be altruistic and want to help people that couldn't have a family themselves have a family. I mean, it was all sorts of different reasons. In a way, they were never that deep, really.
Mm.
It was just like, I want to help someone.
That's nice.
Yeah, which I think is really, really nice. And it just felt like such an amazing gift. And I think if I ever do get the opportunity to meet our donor, I'll just have nothing but almost love for him, I think, you know, and gratitude.
Do you get, so well, obviously you picked that particular individual, do they send you any information about, or can you, is there an option to get in contact?
So with a anonymous donor, your child has the right to track them down when they're 18.
Okay.
I think it's 18, it might be 16, but there's a register, known donor, a donor register where children with donor conception can track down their biological sperm donor. So, you know, if and when your child wants to do that, they can decide to do that themselves, but it's their decision.
It's their choice. Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice to have that option.
I think it is nice to have that option, yeah.
And does it, do they, when you go through the donor process, do they tell you if there are any genetic things to be aware of?
You get all of that information.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you get all the genetic profile, but also they wouldn't be allowed to be a donor if there was anything. So they have rigorous testing. I wish I knew, I could tell you more about what that all is for. I'm sure you'd be really interested in it, but you get a real rundown of everything. So yeah, it's great to have that, all of that information, and it's necessary, because actually if you were having a baby with your partner naturally, you would know all of that stuff. So I think it's only fair
that you have the same information. So you get the delivery the women's clinic,
yeah.
And then what happens, and when did you both decide, right, we're gonna go for it?
So then it's there and you pay for storage, and so there's no pressure, you know,
you can do it,
you
whenever,
just do it in your own time, whenever is right for you. You have a fertility test at the women's clinic, so they tell you if there are any issues, and they make a recommendation. For example, they test your AMH and they do an internal ultrasound, and if you did have issues to the point that they felt that IUI, which I'm sorry, I don't know what it stands for, something
intrauterine insemination.
Thank you, that one. If they felt that that was like unlikely to work, they would probably tell you. Of course, it's always your own decision,
yeah.
And you're paying for it. But I think you would find out if you had, if it was scientifically
likely to happen,
unlikely
or
not.
Yeah.
Or not,
yeah.
Likely. Of course, they can't ever say for sure.
For sure, but they can give you an educated,
they give you a picture,
bit
you
of
can
advice.
Choose for yourself.
Yeah.
So, in our case, we were really lucky that everything was quite straightforward, so we could choose to do IUI, which is basically like the least invasive of all of the options. And then they ask you to track your cycle.
How did Jenny decide to do that, and what did she do in the kind of run-up? Was there anything she changed?
I think we just both stopped drinking,
yeah,
a bit. Well, cut down on drinking. That was it. We didn't. We actually felt like we didn't want to do
too much,
because then at least if it didn't work, we'd have things we could do next time.
Yeah.
Whereas if we threw everything at it the first time and it didn't work,
you're a bit like, oh God, where do I go next?
So we didn't even do acupuncture or anything like that. So we didn't really read too much about it. We just went for it. And
how did she track her cycle? Because there are so many different ways.
I think
you
we
can
used Clue. And then when it said, you know, ovulation, just got one of those things from Boots, stick things. And then when you get a positive ovulation result, you phone the clinic, and then they book you in for the insemination.
And
the
how,
day.
So it's literally like the next day that
yeah.
you, okay, so you call them up and you're saying, I've got a positive LH.
Mm-hmm.
Measure,
yeah.
Because that's the pee on the stick,
and then
they
say
right,
come
in the next day.
And I think if it's a weekend, they get you in. I think, or they get you. They're really conscious of getting you in as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I don't want to say because I don't want to get it wrong, but it's something like if it's a weekend or if it's a Sunday, they will still
come and see
facilitate
you anyway.
Yep. That somehow.
Great.
I know.
So you both go down to
so
the clinic.
So you just went down, and then you have the procedure, which is like, you know, quite unromantic.
What, they didn't buy you dinner before?
I know, exactly.
What?
It was like
it no was, candles.
No, it was like, but really straightforward, really nice nurse, all fine. And then, yeah, I think we actually went off to the countryside that weekend to stay with some friends and sort of
just chill
about it and just
chill.
That's good. It was hard because they had lots of champagne on offer and we didn't. Well, I drank some, but my wife didn't. And yeah, then just waited like however many weeks it is and did the test and it was positive.
Wow. Did you expect it to be positive?
Weirdly, I think we both did.
Wow.
We didn't ever admit it or say it.
No, but it's like that intuition that you had.
I think it was like an intuition. Yeah. It just was so the right time for us. And I think we were really, really lucky. And the more I speak to other people about their experiences, I realise how unusual it was that it was that easy for us, and I'm so grateful that it was. But it's almost like everything else isn't easy, so like the moral conversations, the decisions that you have to make, all of that other like intellectualizing of it, it was really hard and it was complicated and complex, and trying to do the right thing for us, for our unborn child, like it was difficult. So almost it was nice that the actual
the
doing
process
of it wasn't
totally
for us.
And then once Jenny was pregnant, I mean, did it kick in straight away that you're like, wow, we're actually going to have a baby, or did it take a while to kind of settle in?
I think it really took a while for us to accept it. It was definitely that thing of not wanting to sort of celebrate it. I don't think we didn't want to jinx it.
Totally.
So we almost got to the point where we were like, we've been so conscious of not celebrating this that we just haven't let ourselves enjoy it.
Believe it in a way.
So we were really conscious of that, and we didn't really read much stuff. We just tried to sort of be healthy, stay relaxed. We actually went and lived in LA for a month.
Oh, nice. Capital of health.
Yeah, did. Yeah, and my wife wasn't really feeling that great in the, I think it was the second month, and it was actually when we were in LA, she was feeling pretty sick.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how was her pregnancy?
But after that, so I think she had 2 months of feeling really rough, and then it was brilliant. Yeah, really, really good.
Then she had lots of energy.
Energy, easy, like, she felt good because she wasn't drinking and was looking after herself, and it was a really nice nurturing time for both of us.
And how do you feel it changed you as a couple? Because I think the journey that we go on through conception, pregnancy and early years can have a dynamic on a couple. So how did you feel that it impacted yours?
Only really in a positive way. During the pregnancy, I think it felt like an amazing, I mean, this sounds so cliche, but like a blessing. Mm. Like we had this, I couldn't believe it, that it was happening for us. Like, it just was so what I'd always wanted, and it was so special. It definitely brought us closer together. And then, of course, the first few months of pregnancy were just, you know, so, so hard. Not pregnancy, of having the baby, were just incredibly demanding on both of us. And so hard.
And how was Jenny's birth experience?
That was, yeah, fine. I feel like I don't really want to speak for her. I'm not sure how much she'd want.
Well, you can share whatever you want and whatever
because
it's
kind of her body.
Well, from your perspective then.
From my perspective as the partner, I would say it was exhausting. We didn't sleep for 4 days. It was very long. It was really, really hard for me to see her in that much pain and to know what to do and how to help her. And it really helped that we had such a good relationship and that we were such good friends and we were so supportive of each other. Because I think in a time like that, if you were anything but that, it would be an absolute nightmare.
I was going to ask, what did you find helped your whole birth experience? So you would say predominantly it was your relationship.
I think so. Just our closeness and our trust and understanding of each other. We did also do hypnobirthing, which really helped us in the run-up to the birth. So we were listening to the CD every night, which was giving you like visualizations, and it really helped us just stay calm. And the whole thing is like, don't read anything, don't watch scary things, don't...
Yeah, there's so much negative stuff.
Yeah, don't engage with any of the negativity. Like, don't just watch rom-coms and have a nice time, yeah. Which we were really up for. In the end, the birth itself wasn't the hypnobirth that we'd hoped for.
They often don't go as planned.
But I would say that having that sort of meditation strategy up our sleeves was really helpful during some of the harder, more prolonged moments, and just... And about, it was great that we were so calm in advance, so that by the time we did get into those like 4 days of absolute trauma, we were in a good place to deal with that. Mm. So
you'd recommend anyone to kind of consider going down that route before birth, just to kind of get your head in the right place?
I think so. I think if you're a really we were both quite cynical people, and we still took something out of it and enjoyed it. So I think... I don't think it's like hugely necessary, but you might as well do whatever you can to feel calm and relaxed.
And did you do the NCT classes or anything like that
preparation? Yeah, we did NCT, which was quite useful. I think if I was doing it again, I might have gone to like, I know in certain areas of London, there's non-NCT groups of similar things that maybe we would have been with people that were slightly more like our kind of people,
because a lot of people go for it for the network.
We were with a really really nice bunch of people, but
just a bit
I
different.
Don't know that they're people that we'd be like lifelong friends with. So I might have done that differently, but I think it's a really good thing to do, and it just helps make it all a bit more real.
Do you remember the point in which you were like, oh my God, this is actually happening? Was it at the birth? Was it before? Was there a specific moment where you were like, you kind of really realise?
I think almost like everything was just such a blur. Even those first few weeks of having the baby, I don't think... It did feel real, obviously, but you're just so tired and so sleep deprived and like in this strange bubble.
Yeah, what was your experience of like coming home and having a new child?
Yeah, difficult. It was difficult. But we got there.
And what do you think was the most, or what was kind of the biggest support to you when you were going through those initial stages of bringing a child home? Because everyone's like, it's so overwhelming. It's such like a shake up of your world. And so what did you find was something that really helped you during that process? If anything.
I mean, obviously, friends and family were supportive, but we didn't have a family that was like next door, that we didn't have... sort of mums that would be there like every day helping us. Honestly, probably just each other, like being kind to each other, and practically like having food deliveries. Like we used Cook, like nice frozen, homemade frozen food that we just had loads of them in the freezer, and we...
So it's easy and quick.
So it was really easy, and we just tried to be quite generous to ourselves in what we were doing every day. We took our time. We didn't really take our daughter out for a while. We did have one book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, which was just quite reassuring.
Yeah, it's just the kind of key need to know bits and pieces.
And actually, to be fair, the NCT network in those early days was great, because everybody was having babies at the same time.
You
and
experienced
was like,
the same thing.
This? Yeah.
Totally. Now, obviously, the kind of 2.4 family unit that used to be the norm is just no longer the norm. So how do you approach raising your daughter now, knowing that this 2.4 approach is no longer the norm, and knowing that your approach might be different from other people's family units. So, for example, when she goes to your nursery or things like that. So how do you approach handling that?
Honestly, at the moment, I don't know. I think until we're at that stage, it's really hard. I know what we'll try and do, which is just be really honest with her, make her confident, sure of herself, love herself, feel good about herself, so that whatever life throws at her, she's able to deal with it and be entirely confident of our love for her. But until she goes to school, I really don't know. But it's actually something that our podcast, Some Families, is going to talk about, exactly that sort of thing.
So, cool, we'll definitely have to tune in for that.
Yeah.
And you're obviously, you know, a working mother, your wife is similarly. And again, that is another thing that's changed over time. You know, before it used to be a much clearer set of dynamics where one parent would stay at home and one would go to work, and now it's totally the norm for both parents to work. How do you and your wife approach handling that?
So we are both currently freelance. It's taken us a while to figure out a routine that works for us all. At first, I was really battling with the idea that I should get a proper job and I should be supporting the family. But in the end, once I just accepted that it wasn't necessarily me that was thinking that, it was like what I thought I should be thinking, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We just accepted that this was our normal. So we're both freelance at the moment. What's working really well is I work 3 days a week and my wife works 2 days a week. And then I look after our daughter on a Monday and Friday, and my wife looks after her the rest of the time. So we don't have any help. We just do it all ourselves.
It's amazing.
And my wife is tenacious, businesswoman, incredibly ambitious, building her empire, staying up until all hours to work. But we make it work. And I think what I've really enjoyed is spending these early months. Our daughter's now 15 months, but to have been there, to have been present, has been such an amazing experience. And I think whatever I've lost out in money from not having a big full-time job, I've gained in just quality time and bonding with my daughter. So it's working really well at the moment. It's a nice balance, but it's been difficult, and it's been a constant conversation and a constant negotiation, and to get to the point where we both feel happy with the amount that we're working and the amount we're looking after our daughter, it's been a journey. But I think we're both feeling good about it now.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to be able to get to the point where you kind of feel like it's working, because I think, as you say, it is a journey to get to that point. So it's great that you feel like...
I mean, it's only taken 15 months, but yeah.
I think that's short. It took me longer than that. And more generally speaking, what do you see, obviously, bringing a daughter up into the world? What do you see as some of the bigger challenges that we've got nowadays? What are some of the things that you're concerned about? What are some of the things that are on your mind about raising kids these days?
I kind of feel philosophical about it, because I think whatever I'm worried about now won't exist by the time she's at the age for me to really worry about it. It will be something else. Like, who could have predicted 15 years ago that Instagram would be the thing that it is today?
Totally.
And so I think for me to be worried about how she'll be using Instagram, well, probably Instagram will be something completely different. It'll be something new. So I'm sure social media and the internet will always now be present in our children's lives in the way that it wasn't for my generation. But in what capacity? Like, I don't know. You know, things change so quickly. Maybe young people won't be using social media in the way they are now. Maybe there'll be a complete reverse of the trend. You know, so many young people are incredibly environmentally aware, activists. You know, I have faith in young people, and I have faith in my daughter to make good decisions and to be an amazing active part of society. So I feel like as long as I give her the tools to be that person. I don't really need to worry because I think she's going to be okay.
That's awesome. That's an amazing approach to have. And you seem to be very philosophical about a lot of things. And especially because as, you know, a same-sex couple, it's not been necessarily an easy and simple ride. So during this whole journey that you've been through, what are some of the things that you yourself help kind of manage the anxiety and help have this philosophical kind of view? Obviously, you've written an amazing book, The Art of Being a Gentlewoman. Like, what are some of the core things that you yourself have done through this process to kind of keep your mind in the right space? Because it is a time of anxiety for everyone.
So definitely the hypnobirthing helped. Actively choosing not to read things. So actively choosing not to go down wormholes of Googling things and reading scare stories.
Google always spells sudden death anyway, yeah, no matter
So not doing that. Talking to my wife a lot about everything, feelings, emotions, physical feelings, everything, keeping our emotional intimacy going throughout this time has been really good. Being open and honest with friends and family, I think, has helped. Knowing when to ask for help. And then, I mean, more recently, like having therapy, like seeing a therapist, looking after myself in that way, taking some time to go to the gym, to see friends, to do the other things in my life that are important.
Self-care as well.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, just seeing my daughter grow up and turn into this amazing person who is so, you know, she's like me and my wife in some ways, but she's also so her own person. And I think I just, as I said, have absolute faith in her and think and confidence in her. And I think she'll be telling us how to deal with stuff, you know,
very quickly, probably. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's really helpful because I think a lot of people struggle from the mental standpoint. So it's always good to hear from other people what's been helpful to them. Now, we've got some quick fire questions just to wrap up. So what is the one piece of advice you'd give to someone else if they were just starting their own journey based on your experience?
Okay, I would say to start looking into it even before you think you're ready. I don't think there's any harm in getting a sort of state of the nation picture of your fertility, which is, I know, something that you sort of promote with the journey.
Yeah, we're very passionate about that.
That it's just good to know, because for all you know, you could think, oh, we're going to have a baby in 5 years, and then the time will come and you might find that you're infertile, and that all of that time that you'd been thinking about what you'd do, you know, you'd been thinking you'd have a baby then, actually you could have been using that time to think, well, to come to terms with that information and to think, okay, so what are our options and what else should we be doing? I think it's just,
it's the knowledge of self is power in a way.
Absolutely. So I think that would be a really good tip. And then as a specific for lesbian couples thinking about starting a family, well, listen to our podcast, Some Families, that will help you. And then just sign up for these seminars and go to everything that's available. Like, there is some information out there now, probably more than when we looked into it a couple of years ago.
We'll get some of these things and we'll put them up on the show notes so people can check it out.
And word of mouth, just honestly, really, that was how we found out most stuff, was just talking to other people who had done it and asking questions and not being afraid of, you know, asking things. One thing that I don't know if this is still the case, but that we found out, was that as a same-sex couple, you have to be married for the non-biological mother to be legally considered the second parent.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Now, this may have changed. We may need to fact check this, but that I felt was a really key piece of information that wasn't massively readily available. to us. I think I found it out by like downloading a PDF from Stonewall.
Wow.
And reading it in the small print.
So you basically really had to go looking to find that piece of information. And that's something that should be really, really publicised, because also lots of couples aren't getting married these days.
Absolutely.
So, okay, that's good to know.
It might well have changed, but certainly when we did it, that was the case.
Okay, and then what was the one either product or thing that you really couldn't live without during your whole journey?
There were a few things. One thing that I wished we bought sooner than we did was the sleepy head.
Oh yeah, that's great.
It's like, for those that don't know, sort of life raft almost.
It's like
a padded little mattress.
With sides,
so that when the babies are tiny, they tend to sort of flail around a bit because they like to be really contained and snuggly. And so if you just put them in a cot, they can kind of wake themselves up quite quickly because there's nothing containing them. So the padded edges of this thing really make them feel safe and secure. And as soon as we used it with our daughter, about 3.5 months in, she started sleeping so much better, and we were like, why didn't we just use this from the beginning?
Yeah. Okay, good tip.
So that's a tip. I think that's probably the main one.
Okay, and then what has been the one thing that surprised you the most about having your daughter?
I think I was surprised by how unanxious I was in the end. I felt like I was always going to be a really neurotic parent. I always had this idea of myself as being terrified of everything all the time. And actually, I think it's a testament to my daughter that I don't feel that. It's like I say again, like I have confidence in her. I just trust that she's... that I, of course, worry about her, as every parent does, but I always thought that I would be a parent that was, like, kind of floored by anxiety and not able to do anything because I was so, so worried about her. But I realised quickly that that just wasn't what my relationship with her was like, and it's a lot more fun and easy and uplifting than I ever thought would be possible. Every stage, you know, even at the beginning, I think I thought that babies just cried the entire time, because that's kind of all you see on TV and films, like really harassed looking mums with like sickle down their face and like terrible hair and like, you know, the mum's like an absolute state. And yeah, there are moments where you are, you know, a bit like that, but our daughter, at least, you know, luckily she didn't have colic or something like that, and she didn't really cry the whole time. It was actually perfectly, like, okay.
Yeah, the movies portray it in a way that it isn't like that all the time.
So I think that was a big surprise for me, that actually early days weren't as... I mean, they were so hard in so many ways, but just I thought I would have this screaming thing to cope with all the time, and I would be, like, my nerves would be shredded. But actually, it was a really positive, nurturing time. She was a good baby, you know. I mean, the sleep that year, she never really slept that well, but it's all much more manageable than I thought. I was really scared of having sleepless nights, because I've always been someone that's really had a like strong routine around going to bed at a certain time and feeling like I need a certain amount of sleep. But once you're in it and you're doing it and that's just your new normal, it's actually okay.
It's funny how that happens. You do,
and
don't you?
I wish I hadn't been so scared of all of that side of things, because I didn't need to be.
Well, that's really good to know, I think, for a lot of people who have yet to go on their journey, that you do often get these kind of scary moments and this, like, I guess sometimes the unknown, it's our default tendency to fear the worst. But actually, I had a very similar experience. You know, you're completely worried about how it's going to change your life and how you're not going to see.
Mm.
And actually something kind of kicks in, and it's surprisingly normal. And then
you're just in it and doing it, and that's it. Yeah.
Well, that's so nice to know. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we'll put up a load of kind of links from some of the things that Lottie has mentioned, as well as the link to her wonderful book that I can truly attest is brilliant and well worth a read.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.